TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
We are the D.O.D. We came to rob the spot like Iron Man star.
There's no point casting it on top of a couple of chairs.
In the world today.
Chair Shot Radio, Chris Platt and the R.E.Y. Cash.
Listen to them clear and put the box right near your ear. Cause you can never fuck with who thinks you love me.
Look at the chair. Look at the shit on the chair.
You are now listening to Chair Shot Radio. Always use your head.
Salutations, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the latest edition of Chair Shot Radio. Chair Shot Radio is brought to you by the good folks at ChairShot.com in association with, I screwed that up all the way. Let's try that again. Chair Shot Radio is brought to you by the good folks at Chair Shot Radio Network in conjunction with TheChairShot.com, reminding you to always use your head. And use your head you shall, and make the smartest purchase you can make this entire week, which is going to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. Pick up your official Chair Shot t-shirt. Now, I know the 4th of July is upon us, so if you type in the promo code July 4th or Liberty, something might happen. I'm not guaranteeing it will, but it just might, so you should give it a shot. And even if you can't, make sure you guys go to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. If you enjoy the content that the men and women provide to you from The Chair Shot, show us some love a little bit. It's a holiday, goddammit. Show us some love. Please and thank you, thank you, and please. We've got shirts for everybody. We've got the old school designs. We've got the new school designs. We've got shirts such as Save Tag Team Wrestling, which I personally love. They've got my personal fave, Jesus Did the Job. We've got Baron Corbin Sucks, you know, the hottest heel in wrestling right about now. Well, maybe that might be Cody, but we'll get to that momentarily. Either
Cody
way,
maybe
man,
face
again,
that the last night, big dog.
If you enjoy what we do, man, show us some love. Make sure you guys go to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. Please and thank you, thank you, and please. Folks, I'm Mr. Velvet Pipes, Christopher Platt, and as always, I'm joined by my brother from another mother, the one, the only, Mr. Ray Cash.
Bro, so look, first and foremost, thank you for having me. I say thank you for having me, but I'm the producer of the show. Nonetheless, still thank you for having me. Number one. Number two, today is basketball Christmas because free agency just started, and I just got through watching the best promo in the business. That includes wrestling, any business, Stephen Anthony Smith, whatever the A stands for, I don't know. Stephen A. Smith out here killing New York. I'm having a blast. I'm having a blast. Thirdly, this is more towards the actual show. The use your head slogan might be used a lot tonight. Probably in a different context.
Oh, Jesus. I just got it. Yes, that's brilliant. Please continue. That's brilliant, by the way.
Yeah, I'm just – it's – boy, I'm telling you, we got a lot of publicity last night as a site, a collective, and a motherfucking crew. And we wasn't even expecting it. So I'm just saying. Thank you, AEW, for the love.
Shout out to AEW for giving us some love, because, yes, I'm pretty sure if you go on Twitter and type in Chair Shot, we're going to come up. So, yes, shout out to AEW. See, you've been shitting on them this whole time, man, and look how much pub they gave us. They put us over indirectly,
well,
but still.
To be fair, the guy who did the Chair Shot, I have his shirt. I am a fan of. So I'm just saying.
Fair enough. So, bro, it's so much going on, man. Where do you want to start, man? You want to talk some NBA, or you want to go just right into it?
For those of you listening, I love y'all, and y'all would hate me, but I really want to just say screw wrestling and just do an NBA pod. But there was a pay-per-view last night we probably need to talk about. So I guess we could real quick throw some reactions of what's happening in the NBA world, see what you think, what I'm thinking. But yeah, man, there's a lot to talk about Fyter Fest. Luckily, we did a show just a couple of days ago, a kind of a catch-up show, if you will. So most of what's happened in the past 10 days was covered in that. So this will probably be specifically AEW Fyter Fest related. And there's some other stuff. Robbie Eagles left Bullet Club and joined Chaos. That's a big thing that's going to grow towards the G1 time. Ring of Honor had a pay-per-view. And Flip Gordon is now the newest member of Villain Enterprise. It's like some stuff happened. But Fyter Fest is really what's going down.
If Ring of Honor has a pay-per-view and nobody watches, did it actually occur?
I saw clips. That's the only reason I can say it did. Because if there were no clips, then I would agree with you that it didn't happen.
Poor Ring of Honor, man. It wasn't that long ago where they were the second biggest company in North America. And now,
it was all good just a week ago. What's up, Kanye?
Pop. Kanye, that's Jay-Z, brother.
Well, I mean, you know, he produced a song. I'm the producer. What you want me to do, you know?
No, that was Jay-Z before it was Kanye. Go back to Hard Knock Life Volume 2,
right.
I believe.
I'm thinking of Ham. You're right. I'm thinking of Ham.
Yes.
I forgot the old song. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. So shout out to Hov, the greatest.
There you go. Well, before we get started, though, man, let people know, you know, for our 5 listeners, man, if they want to call in and chime in and give their opinions on anything, NBA playoffs, Ring of Honor, AEW, hell, 4th of July, summertime, whatever, man. Let them know how they can reach us.
Yeah, man, you can holler at your boys at 914-803-4532. That's 914-803-4532. And because everything works in threes, 914-803-4532.
Yeah, call up, man. We'd love to hear from you. So before we get into AEW, we do have to talk a little bit of NBA because, the NBA is hot as fish grease right now. And I talked about this on our previous show that we recorded, how the NBA is similar to professional wrestling in that all the scuttlebutt and everything that's going on surrounding the actual event is more interesting than the actual event. And free agency has descended upon us. We haven't gotten the official word yet. He's supposed to announce it at some particular point in time this evening. He's probably going to make the official announcement while we're on these airwaves, but Kevin Durant reportedly is going to sign with the Brooklyn Nets to join Kyrie Irving and allegedly DeAndre Jordan.
Yes.
Mom from the State Farm commercials, if you ain't familiar.
He was Mom, wasn't he?
Yes,
one of those good old days, right? Lob City. It has been officially announced. He just announced it through his boardroom website. Because you know,
that
show on ESPN,
that's the show
boardroom.
He does on,
With Jay Williams from Duke,
Which is, that's one reason that I felt like I knew he was out of there, because Jay Williams went on ESPN television. I can't remember if it was First Take or Get Up, but he was
Get
on
Up.
One of these
it's
shows.
Get Up.
And he was. Yeah. It was. Oh, so you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Well, he's a normal cast member on Get Up. But
Yeah, but he was going ham on, you know, Golden State's medical staff and how, you know, KD was misdiagnosed and blah, that. And the fact that they have a show together, I felt like that gave us some insight into what KD was thinking. Because we talked about this before we went live on the air, that KD kind of felt a certain way about the medical staff. They felt as if, or excuse me, he felt as if he was misdiagnosed. And you know, the thing is, okay, yeah, he chose to play. He had an option not to play. But if you've ever been around any professional athletes in any capacity, these melon farmers are the most competitive people on the face of the earth. You got to protect them from themselves. Like, at some point in time, there should have been an adult in the role, because, of course, he wants to play. That's what they do.
You're absolutely right. And to add more context to the situation, Kevin never really felt embraced by the team. He felt like a teammate, but he didn't feel like a brother, because those guys had been through so many wars together without him. And it boiled over this year, because if you remember, I know the league season is so long, but at the beginning of the season, him and Draymond got into a fight visually and audibly, and Draymond was like, look, you a bitch. You can leave if you want to, because you're going to leave anyway. Well, he gone, so.
And, you know, the thing about Kevin Durant is, and, you know, let me parse this by saying that, frankly, I'm not going to lie, man, my bias, man, I'm going to side for the athlete as opposed to management or anything else. And I understand, you know, the racial implications when you're dealing with the media, because ultimately it's a bunch of fat white dudes that are pissed that, you know, they couldn't be where you're at. So there's that stance and that bias on it. But we can't lie. KD is super sensitive. I mean, he got into it with the media in Oklahoma City, and, you know, the Oklahoma City Thunder is the only game they got in town. So they cover that team with kid. Yeah, they love you. They cover that team with kid gloves because you are the only game in town. And he got into it with them. And I mean, he's proven he's hella sensitive between the burner accounts and, you know, things of that nature. He's just, he's
you
sensitive.
Know who I am. I'm Kevin Durant. You know who I am. Yeah, absolutely.
He one of these new dudes, man. And they just kind of built differently. And that's okay, but it just is what it is. So, yeah, I feel like he thought that if he went to Golden State and he was able to win championships, even though he was clearly, with all due respect to Steph Curry, he was clearly the best player on that team. But I thought that he thought that he was going to be embraced differently and have an opportunity to supplant LeBron if he went there and won a bunch of championships. But obviously, that didn't happen. Most people kind of dogged him because they said, well, he went to the front runner. I disagree with that, but that was the prevailing opinion.
So a lot to unpack. Number one, yes, he knew he was going to get met with some backlash, as LeBron did, and that was expected. But the thing I don't think he expected was the love that the Bay has for Steph. Steph is the greatest warrior of all time. Like, he will have a statue outside of Chase Center eventually when he retires because of what he's done for that franchise, how he's built that franchise up, and how he's carried himself as the leader of that franchise. So even if he wasn't the best player anymore, it was still his team. And for great players, there's a big difference between being the best player and being the guy. And he was never the guy, and he was used to being the guy. And there was never any friction between him and Steph, but there was always friction on the squad because the squad rolled with Steph, because Steph was there when there was nobody. I remember they were talking about when the whole beginning of that team started, it was, we're going to keep Monte or Steph. Monte Ellis, that's a name you ain't heard in a long time. So there you go. That's how long ago that was. So that's number one.
Who was a baller, by the way? Let's give Monte his flowers. Like, Monte was a baller. He's not Steph, but he was a baller.
He put buckets up, but he couldn't do anything else. Yeah, he couldn't do anything else but a bucket.
The league passed him by. Yeah.
The second thing I wanted to respond to is Kevin Durant absolutely is sensitive, and the word that I've heard that describes it the best is mercurial, and that also describes Kyrie Irving. And Kyrie Irving actually is moody and mercurial. So the interesting thing to me is, they're going to be great wherever they go because on court, they got game. Kyrie, I think, by saying I'm going to go with Kevin, I think he's accepted the fact that he's better as a number two on a championship team than a number one. I think he's accepted that, which is fine. But the interesting thing is, y'all chose to go to New York being as sensitive as y'all are. It's going to be worse in New York.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. Please continue, man, because we're about to say the same thing. So go ahead.
I'm just saying, like, RJ Barrett got drafted, and in his press conference, they asked him, so you going to be able to carry this franchise on your shoulders? And dude was like, I didn't even sign my contract. That's New York, bro. Like, New York is the toughest media in the world outside of maybe London. There's nothing tougher than New York for athlete in any sport. I mean, they hound the Red Bulls, the damn soccer team. That's just the way New York is. So, and Kyrie's from New York, so I'm sure he's prepared for it in a way. But KD from D.C., bro, it's different. You know what I'm saying? KD got love in Oklahoma. KD has been loved everywhere he's went, but he's never been embraced. And I'm sure that's part of why he has that chip on his shoulder. He went to UT, and they loved him, but they knew he was the one and done, so they give him all the love. He went to Oklahoma City, and they loved him, but then Russ played harder, so they gave him the love. He went to Golden State, and he was the best player and got them two titles. But, you know, still Steph, two-time MVP. So him going to Brooklyn is a good move on paper. it makes all the sense in the world, like the Golden State move did, but you're going to be destroyed on every single thing you do. If you walk into a restaurant and you look at somebody wrong, that's front page news. Like everything you do. I hope you're ready for that, bro. You got 4 years of that.
And that's the part that I had trepidation about and why, frankly, I didn't understand. Because, you know, for basically this entire season, the narrative was that he and Kyrie were going to end up in New York playing in Madison Square Garden with the Knicks. And everything you just said, that's why I didn't understand it. Just as sensitive as he is. And maybe Brooklyn isn't going to be as tough as New York, but it's still New York. So,
yeah.
You know, you're going to have a grace period because, you know, he's probably not going to play this year. Like, that injury is debilitating. And I'd be very surprised if he came back and played any at all this season. And when you get back, there's going to be a honeymoon period where people are just going to be happy that you're there and you guys are there. But let them have a 3 or 4 game winning streak. It's going to go all bad. And like you said, how are you going to react to that? That being in that fishbowl, which is NYC, when you couldn't handle it when you were in OKC. And
Chris,
you know, that's like they're apples and orangutans.
Yes, and the Knicks are trash. So it's not like you got the other team down the street that can take all the noise. It's like the Clippers and the Lakers. The Clippers can do anything. It's still going to be the Lakers town, right? So the Clippers could win 70 games and the Lakers could win 20, but they got LeBron. They the headlines. This ain't that, bro. It doesn't matter because y'all the only game in town right now. The Knicks' big signing today was getting Julius Randle. And God bless dude because he can ball, but he is not your number one signing type of dude. So all of the entire – Odell Beckham is gone from the football. You know what I'm saying? Right now – every major Yankees player is hurt. And same with the Mets. The dude they call Thor, whatever his name is, he stays hurt. They don't got nobody to talk about to talk to right now but you and Kyrie. Good luck, dog.
And I want to double back to the point that you made about Kyrie, that this was his admission that he's a number two. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing because historically in the league, and I'm just thinking off the top of my head, there's only been two players I can think of under 6'4 that have actually led their teams to championships, which is Steph Curry and my personal favorite, Isaiah Thomas. Other than that, it's kind of hard for somebody under 6'4 to lead their team to a title because ultimately you can be taken out the game just through physicality. You know what I mean? They can just put a dog on you and you get beat up. Like it's just very difficult to do that. And that's not a knock. You know what I mean? It just is what it is. Like there's a reason why tall people are better at basketball because the taller you are, the easier it is for you to put the ball in the hole.
You're absolutely right. But I'm just thinking, because I'm a huge LeBron fan. So I'm thinking back to the time when Kyrie forced himself out of Cleveland. That bothered me personally.
Bro, please, let's not go there because I'm so pissed off because in the fact that he even apologized to LeBron this year and made that publicly, I'm like, we could have been doing this whole time because they were perfect compliments for each other.
Absolutely.
Because, you know what I mean, like Kyrie is a brilliant shot maker. He's basically the new Kobe, just smaller. But that's his mentality and that's how he operates. So he had a guy that was able to facilitate the offense and do everything that he wasn't capable of doing. And then when it got down to the get down, you needed somebody to make a shot. There's Kyrie.
So,
I mean, they were literally a match made in heaven. So, yeah, I'm still butthurt that got broken up.
Hey, and I didn't like it either because I'm a LeBron fan. I could care less about the team, but I rock with LeBron. But the only reason I bring that up is because that felt like a kid at home saying, well, you know, I can get my own place. I'll be better. I'll be fine. I can get my own place. Everything will be cool. I don't need to stay at home. And you go out there and your anger and your drive gets you through the first 3 months. And that fourth month, you're like, this for the birds. This ain't what I thought it was. And his admission of that out loud and then saying, I apologize to LeBron because I didn't get it, but I get it now. I think that was him accepting the fact that, look, I could be a number one on most teams, but if I wouldn't win a title, this ain't for me to take all of this on my own. Because in what world are you on a team that goes to game seven of the Eastern Conference Finals, and you get better without you, and you get better the next year, and y'all barely get out of the second round. That's a you thing.
Kyrie's a weird dude, man, and, you know, having watched him so many years in Cleveland, I feel like I have a unique understanding about it, and you probably do as well, man, being a LeBron fan, because he does too much. Like, there's a lot of times where he just does too much, and you can't really fault him for it because he's such a talented shot maker and creator. Like, he can literally get his shot off anytime he pleases. But sometimes it disrupts the flow of the offense, and he takes you out the game, and you look at him, and it's like, God damn, dude, you're doing too much. But then when he does that, then the next game he'll drop 45. Like, that's just, you know what I mean?
You know who he is? You know who he is?
Don't say Ivo.
No, he's 2008 okay. Carmelo Anthony. The ball's going to stop with him, but he's going to get a bucket every time. But Kyrie's not going to make anybody else better by his game. His presence can lift you up, because if he's balling, then maybe my shot will fall too. But he's not going to make you better by what he does on the court. And the ball get to him. And even Kevin Durant said he has every tool in the toolbox offensively. Anything you want to do on the court, he can do. Dribble, score, pass, shoot, anything. But he doesn't make anybody else better. And as a point guard, and as the leader of the team as a point guard, you got to have your team built around you for that. And those Celtics weren't built for that kind of point guard. So maybe Brooklyn would be different with Kevin being the number one guy, having a bunch of shooters and specific players like DeAndre, who's going to do nothing else but rebound and shoot. They got the big dude with the afro, Josh, whatever his name is, who does nothing but not rebound, shoot, rebound and defend. That big dude with the afro does nothing but rebound and get blocks. Like, they're going to have specialty guys around them to where, much like Cleveland did, to where he can be who he is and it doesn't hurt the team.
Well, the thing I didn't understand about Brooklyn is that you had D'Angelo Russell there, and he finally came into his own. And the thing is, he gives you probably maybe 80% of what Kyrie does. You could have got him cheaper. He's younger. He doesn't have a history of injuries like Kyrie does, and he appears to play better with others than Kyrie does. So I don't understand what the rush was to ship him out of town to bring in Kyrie. Like, I just didn't get that part. But maybe they knew what it was, though. Maybe they knew it was a package deal. Like, if we get Kyrie, we're going to get KD. Maybe that's just what it was.
It was definitely a package deal, but let me give you an analogy of what makes sense. Can I give you an analogy of what makes sense?
But go right ahead.
Well, try me. Your family's businesses before, right? This is the same thought process of, if I'm going to buy into a franchise, am I going to buy a Papa John's, knowing the history that they've had, but I know the popularity they have, or am I going to buy a mom and pop shop? That Papa John's going to get you more money.
I'm not feeling the analogy, though, man, because everything I said, like D'Angelo Russell, he's only like, what, 23, 24 years old. At that age, he gives you 80% of what Kyrie does. He's younger. You could have got him cheaper, and he plays better with others. Like, if landing KD was contingent on getting Kyrie, then you made the right decision. But I'd rather roll with D'Angelo or even Kemba Walker for that point, like who the Celtics just signed. I'd rather roll with him.
Kemba has never proved in his entire career, going back to college, he can play with another good player. I'm not saying he can't. He just hasn't proven it yet.
Well, that's because he hasn't had any other good players to play with.
I didn't say what the facts were. I just said he hasn't proven it yet. I'm just saying. So we'll see this year. Because Jason Tatum is waiting to be an all-star. Waiting to be an all-star.
I feel like Kemba is the perfect match for that Boston team, because you remember when they went to the conference finals last year in the playoffs and Rozier showed his ass. No, not with IT. Talking about the Rozier year last year, when they shipped IT out of there. Yeah, and he's a better Rozier. And again, he plays better with others. Now, the problem they're going to have is he's what, 29, 30 right now?
Kemba?
Yeah,
he's somewhere around there, because if Kyrie's 27 and Kemba graduated, so yeah, he got to be up there.
Yeah. So that's going to be the issue with them because in, you know, year four or five of that contract, you might end up – because guards don't necessarily age well just because they're smaller guys and, you know, that wear and tear wears on you. So, you know, by years four and five in that contract, you might end up in a Chris Paul situation in Houston, which you're familiar with. Like, hell, man, they're only in year two of that contract, and Chris Paul about to get damn near $40 million this year, and he's washed. And there's nobody in their right mind is going to take that contract, especially as prickly as he is.
Well, you say that, but this is – this, if you're an old school basketball fan, like I know you are, you'll get this. Those of you listening, there was a time before everybody got $100 million when there was a young man named Ralph LaFrance who couldn't play no more and had a contract that was like worth $17 million and he got traded. If he could have got traded back then, anybody can get traded. So I don't know.
Touche. 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 But yeah, that Houston situation, that's a totally different mess. But so. Okay, not only do we have the KD, Kyrie, and Mom signing in Brooklyn, I'm hearing scuttlebutt that Kawhi Leonard is going to sign with the Lakers, or at least the Lakers, as of this particular point in time, are the front runners to sign, and I don't understand that whatsoever. You know, from Kawhi's perspective, because of attrition and because of injuries, you got to, going into next season, you got to look at Kawhi as the best player in the league right now. Like, yeah, and if I'm Kawhi, like, I literally, just as a one-man band, led a team to a championship. I had a lot of help through injuries, but I just led a team to a championship by my goddamn self. So now I'm going to go to the Lakers where I'm probably going to be the third wheel. Like, I understand he's an L.A. guy and he wants to maybe go home. L.A. guys are weird like that. Like, they always end up wanting to go home. Maybe it's because they grew up in L.A. And, you know, maybe if I grew up in L.A., I understand it more. But
there's no better place to live for a guy of that, for a person of that tax bracket. That's the best place to live for those guys. So that's what it is.
You know, Miami might want to have a conversation with you.
Yeah, but you don't have to worry about hurricanes.
Touche, but you got to worry about earthquakes.
Yeah, but there's a lot less earthquakes than hurricanes.
All right, fair enough. But, yeah, so I get that. But why would you want to go and become the third banana on a team where you know you're going to be the third banana? I felt like the Clippers made more sense to him. I mean, now if he goes to the Lakers, they're going to win the title next year, point blank period. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter what you put around them because you got AD, you got Kawhi, and you got LeBron who's coming off an injury. I don't know how good he's going to be coming off that injury, but he's such an intelligent basketball player that at the very least, at worst case scenario, he's going to be top seven in the league.
Okay, so he won't be the third wheel. He'll be the second wheel because the way LeBron's teams are set up, the big is always going to do nothing but rebound and shoot. And AD's just going to essentially be, until LeBron retires or whatever happens, or he gets older, AD's going to be a third wheel. That's just the way LeBron's teams are built. The big is always the least, most important offensively. But work with me.
Yeah, but AD's not, this ain't Bosh. This ain't Kevin Love. Like, AD's a completely different animal than those two guys.
You're right, but both of those guys that you mentioned, Bosh and Kevin Love, were better offensively than AD is. AD's great. AD's great. But AD didn't have the offensive game that Bosh and Kevin Love had.
Both of those guys are highly skilled offensively, but AD is better offensively. I feel confident saying that. And that might not make sense, but that I feel confident saying that. Like, AD is literally a top five player in his league when he's healthy. And he was healthy this year. They just didn't play him because they knew he was about to get up out of there. But that's a top five player. And Bron hasn't played with a top five player anytime in his career.
No, you're right. But also think about this, and I'll get back to my point in a second, but Giannis Antetokounmpo is MVP and can't consistently hit a 15-footer. So, you know, what you're able to do to offset your shortcomings makes you great. AD is a great offensive player, but he's not greatly skilled yet. He just started to develop a shot. And I don't mean like a 10-footer or a 12-footer. I mean like an outside shot. You couldn't trust him to hit threes 2 years ago. Kevin Love and Chris Bosh came in the league with that kind of range. So I'm just saying, from a skill perspective, they were better offensive players. It's just they don't have the athleticism that AD has. Anyway, to the bigger point, the best spot for Kawhi to go back is back to Toronto. But if he goes to LA, think about this. Remember when the Heatles got together and LeBron took a step back that first year because it was D-Wade's team, and then
which was a mistake, but yes, absolutely.
And they got embarrassed by Dallas in the finals, and then D-Wade realized the only way we're going to win is if I give the best player on the damn team and in the world the reins to the team, and they were a different team the rest of the 3 years. I think LeBron is man enough to say, Kawhi, it's your time, bro. If you come, reins are yours. I'll play point. I'll get everybody involved, but the game is yours. I really do think that's on the table.
Well, I mean, the best part of his game is his basketball IQ and his passing, which I feel those things go hand in hand. So you might be right about that. The thing about Toronto is, and I'm just looking at this from a business aspect. If you play in Toronto, man, you get taxed twice. You got to pay American taxes and Canadian taxes. And along with the entertainment tax that you have to pay in every city that you perform. You know what I mean? So I get why he wanted to come back onto U.S. soil. So just from a money aspect, that makes sense to me.
No, same here. I'm just saying from a team perspective, that makes the most sense. But, yeah, the rest of it, absolutely. I'm surprised. That's why I was surprised they traded DeMar DeRozan, because he wanted to be there. Like, not many people want to stay in Toronto. Toronto's a great city, might be the best total city in the league.
Toronto's the shit, yes.
Yeah, but in terms of as an athlete, as a guy who was born in America, living there, and then they have hard summers, yeah, absolutely. So I can understand him wanting to go back and live on the West Coast and wake up and look at the beach. Like, I get that. And it's 70 degrees year round. Like, I understand that. It's hard to give the Clippers any credence when they've never gotten free agents. And I'm not counting Chris Paul because he was traded.
That's true.
But they're one free agent away from contention. They're not going to be a championship team, but contention. But I really think that the trump card is, if LeBron says, look, this is the Lakers, your team, baby. I'll take – you're not a talker. I'll take the lead in the media. But when we huddle up, it's on you, big dog. Same thing that my brother D-Wade from me, I'm going to pass it down to you. Nothing beats that, bro.
And at the end of the day, it's still the Lakers, man. That's still the premier franchise. Like, who doesn't want to be winning playing for the Lakers, winning in L.A.? Like, that's – yeah. You can pretty much just whip your dick out and slap any bitch you want to sleep with and chill consent. Like, that's I'm saying that trying to be funny, but you understand what I'm saying. Like, that's the premier franchise in the league. Like, yeah, so, and if they get those three guys on the same team, they're going to win the title next year. I don't care what they put behind them. They can put you and I, and we can be, you know, the third and fourth, or the fourth and fifth men on that team, and we're still going to win a championship. By the way,
I'll give them a good 20 minutes.
By the way, I am going to I am declaring myself eligible for the 2020 NBA draft. So if there's any NBA teams out there that are looking for a past his prime point guard who can't shoot, I'm here for you. I'm your man.
And anybody looking for a way past his prime small to power forward at 6'1", who's pretty out of shape and has sleep apnea, I got you. I'll give him my all.
I got to stop smoking because I'm as of right now, I could probably give him 10 minutes. If I stop smoking, maybe I can get up to 20.
What it do, baby?
Pop. Okay, before we get into Brazil, what other free agents are out there that we're forgetting? Oh, Jimmy Butler, man. If you're Jimmy Butler, what do you do?
Jimmy Butler. Okay, so that's a twofold question. Am I putting a premium on lifestyle and money or winning? Because if it's winning, it's Philly, not even a question. But if it's lifestyle and money, Miami looks real good. I'm just saying. You said it yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I can't fault anybody want to go play in Miami. Like, goddamn.
and if he goes to Miami, he's instantly the guy. And Miami was a playoff team last year. They're a 7-8 seed. So it's him. They pop up to a 6-5. You competitive. You're not championship competitive like Philly is, but you're competitive. But you in Philly, you might win the chip next year. And that's how good Philly can be.
And that's where I'm at, because if I'm Philly, I do everything in my power to run that team back. Like, I really do, because you got to be looking at yourself. Like, we're, hypothetically speaking, we're a fortuitous bounce away from possibly playing for an NBA championship. You know what I mean? Philly literally could have won it this year.
If Philly plays Milwaukee, I think the same thing happens. I think Philly beats Milwaukee because they're deeper.
Exactly. Exactly. So what you hope if you're Philly is that Ben Simmons spends his summer developing a jump shot as opposed to keeping up with the Kardashians, and you roll the dice and you run it back again and see what happens, especially if Kawhi leaves the East. You run it back and see what happens. Like, I don't really see another option. Like, I was surprised that they brought Brent Brown back as coach, because I don't really think he's the coach, and there was a lot of things that he did questionable in the playoffs, especially in that game 7. I've got a lot of questions about him. I don't know if he's the guy, but at the same time, they're that talented that they can make it work. They can make it work.
I'll run it back, man,
and see what happens.
For all of the positives that came out of the process, and it took a long time, but there were some, the hilarity of the fact that two of the three guys that they drafted, so all of the guys they drafted have injury problems, and two of the three can't shoot. When I'm talking about Ben Simmons and Markel Fultz. And not like bad shots, like need to. Markel Fultz was so bad that that man is seeing a doctor for what's wrong with his shot. Like, these are like legendary bad shots. So good on you, Philly.
Well, they got him up out of there, though, in the Tobias Harris trade, didn't they?
He's in Orlando, but they've drafted him number one. They could have had Jason Tatum.
Yeah. Or even Lonzo Ball, which that was a better pick than Markel. And I don't want to shit on Markel because he's so young, man. So we pray that he can get it together. But it ain't looking good right now.
Hey, you know what I pray for that man? I pray that man doesn't lose his money because he's loaded for life. Whether he plays the game or not, that man is good. He got $40 million in the bank. He's straight.
Yeah, touche. So what other, before we get into the rest of the man, are there any other notable free agents that we need to talk about?
Notable, no. We're waiting on Kawhi. We're waiting on D'Angelo Russell. Anything else major, everybody else major resigned. Dame resigned for $196 mil in Portland. Chris Middleton, who's an all-star from Milwaukee, resigned for $179 mil. Tobias Harris resigned with Philly for $180 mil. Yeah, it's the market, bro. The market is just that high.
Yeah, I like Middleton. I don't like him at 179, though. I feel like we could have made a play for Tobias Harris for that.
Can I be honest with you?
Sure.
Chris Middleton at 179 in this market is a steal. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but in this market, a guy that long with that level of defensive intensity, with that level of shot making, and at that age, for 179, that's a steal. And I know that's crazy, but just look at all the measurables. And he plays perfect with Greek Freak. And Greek Freak about to sign that Supermax next year. So, like, those are two guys you're building around.
Yeah, he just I was a huge Chris Middleton fan going into this postseason. And he came up kind of short in that Eastern Conference Finals. So, you know what I mean?
Giannis did, too. That whole team has a lot of learning to do. Season.
Yeah, touche. But the NBA season is going to be interesting, man, to see, you know, once all the musical chairs stop and everybody lands where they're going to land, this is going to be interesting. And obviously Golden State is vulnerable. They've lost KD. I'd be surprised if Klay came back. And if he does come back, he's not going to be the same Klay. And,
well,
you know, they've got some issues.
So Klay agreed before free agency started to come back for the max. It hasn't been announced since free agency started, but I'm sure that that's in the bank. The interesting thing is, and then like we got really got to get to some wrestling. The interesting thing is they're talking with D'Angelo Russell on possibly doing a sign and trade Kevin for D'Angelo so they don't lose anything. And how they're going to play that, they're going to have to play 2 points and Clay at the three. I don't know how it's going to work, but Steph has shown himself to be unselfish enough to play with anybody they put next to him. So if you let Steph be a two guard and just shoot and let D'Angelo have to get the people involved and let Draymond still kind of be the point forward he is, that could be dangerous offensively. Defensively is a different conversation. But offensively, that's
where I'm coming from. Defensively, how do you hide Steph if Klay Thompson is now at your three? I don't really see how that works out. I mean, it might be interesting, and they could figure out a way to make it work. But, I don't know how you hide Steph defensively.
I got an answer for you. You play 1-2-2. You play 1-2-2 or 2-3 all game. You've never seen an NBA team do it for that long. That's all you can do.
Yeah, but if you do that throughout the regular season, when it comes to postseason, they'll figure that out. But you know what? Then again, I don't know because, hell, Steve Kerr couldn't figure out the boxing one that Toronto was playing on Steph Curry. So you might be onto something there. I don't understand how he couldn't figure that out. It's a boxing one, man.
Like,
that's
my
high
heart.
School shit. Yeah.
That hurt my heart.
That's literally what Kansas did to prevent Steph from taking that Davidson team to the Final Four.
Oh, so they went back in. They went back in the vault and looked that up, huh?
Yeah, but these are professionals, man. How can you not figure that out, Steve? Like, you got out coached, bro. And I don't even think Toronto's coach is that great. But you clearly got out coached.
No, you're right. He's not that good. He's good, but he's not great. They got out coached, but that's a completely different series if that entire team's healthy too. So there's a lot
of course,
of
yes, of course, of course. That's true. Either way, man, the NBA is lit, and I don't see how that's not the best league. You know what I mean? Like, it's clearly the best league. We didn't even talk about the Marvin Bagley III and Dame Lillard rap battle. Like, this is the best league,
God.
Man. We didn't talk about Zion going to New Orleans. Like, this is the best league, man.
It's absolutely the most interesting league, but until they do football numbers, money talks, big dog. Until they do football numbers. I'm an NBA guy. I grew up wanting to be in the league, so I'm always gonna say NBA's best. But like numbers talk, like money, like what's the saying that Hov said? Money
numbers don't. Men lie, yeah. Women lie, numbers don't.
I'm telling you, bro. And nobody in
That's
football
fair.
Right now.
That's fair. And football ain't even that. Well, I don't know. I haven't been watching for the last 2 years. So when I come back, I'll see if football has improved. But the last time I watched, football wasn't even that slick. But give it about 20 years, man. The NBA is going to supplant the NFL.
Well, I think they've already supplanted them in the things that matter to the NBA. And so from a social standpoint, the most popular players in this country are basketball players. Not even close. From an interest standpoint among certain demographics, it's not even close, basketball. But football brings that corporate money in. And there's 16 games, so everything seems more important in football than basketball, which is why Adam Silver, who's the best commissioner in sports, is working on changing the season and making it more important. Because when it gets to the playoffs, season's lit. But, you know, when it's like January 27th and, like, you ain't seen Steph in three games because he's resting on that DNP coach's decision, you know, it's not that interesting.
Well, the reason I say that basketball is ultimately going to supplant football as the top sport is because we're eventually going to get to a tipping point where parents just stop letting their kids play football. Like, it's going to happen. You know, the more information we get and the more we learn about concussions and CTE, people are going to stop letting their players, or excuse me, letting their sons play football, which is a perfect segue to go into the show that was Firefest that happened last evening.
Hey,
you
Chris.
See how I did that there?
Chris, yes. Do you hear that?
What's that?
That sounds like journalism. Look at my boy. Look at my boy. That's a clap for you, sir. That's a stand ovation.
I appreciate that, brother. Thank you. I have moments, man. I do have my moments. I'm not just a guy on here talking shit and saying outrageous things, man. Every now and again, I can do some things. I'm not saying, I'm just saying.
I love it. Let's get to it.
So, for those that don't know, and if you're listening to this, clearly you know, but that's how you set things up. AEW had their Fighter Fest. Did I say that correctly? Fest last evening. And it was free on Bleacher Report, which that was totally cool. So I'm just going to get my shit out the way because I'm going to let you go ahead and because I know, yeah, I already know. You know. You know, I know. So
chill, bro.
You know. So one of the, I compare professional wrestling to black award shows. There's going to be some good. There's going to be some bad. There's going to be some moments that are absolutely amazing. There's going to be some moments that are absolutely cringeworthy. But the bottom line is when you get done with the show, you're going to feel as if you were entertained. And that's how I felt coming out of this show. Like, there was some good, there was some bad. Obviously, we're going to get into the cringeworthy. But overall, I was entertained. So the main thing that I had coming out of this show, and the main takeaway that I had, and it's not new. I'm not saying anything, groundbreaking, but it was just so out there in your face after this show, is that they're going to have a hard time trying to fill in that roster and have compelling storylines up and down the card. Like, the main event, they're good. You know, they got Jericho, they got Moxley, they got Omega. You can factor Hangman Page and MJF into that main event picture, and that's good right there. Like, you can go to war with that. And the tag team division is pretty good as well. You got the Young Bucks, you've got the Lucha Brothers, you've got the ambiguously gay duo. I can't remember their name. What's their name?
Best Friends, but yeah.
Thank you. And you've got a House Party, which that was. SCU. I can't forget SCU.
And the Don't Call Me the Dark Order, the Super Smash Brothers guys, those guys.
Yeah, the former Super Smash Brothers. Yeah, got them, and you got not House Party. What did you call it? Private Party.
Yeah.
Which that was my first introduction to them, and yo, those brothers can go, man. And that match was one of the better matches on the show last night, and I thought they told a really good story about how talented and athletic these guys are, but ultimately it was their inexperience that cost them the match. But it's a team that you need to be looking out for in the future. Like, I thought that match, that three-way tag match told a brilliant story. So they're good there. Their women's division is trash, and their undercard is trash. I know you're going to get to the shot heard around the world, pun intended. But, I mean, you got a bunch of Jimmy Havoc-looking guys. And, yo, man, I'm pretty sure I could whoop Jimmy Havoc's ass. I mean, you know, save that I can avoid the treacherous paper cut of doom. I'm pretty sure I could whoop his ass. And Darby Allin is the same thing. And that's the thing, man. If we're going to present this product to a live studio audience on a major cable network, the main event, we're good. But we're going to need more than the Jimmy Havocs. We're going to need more than the Marco Stunts, who looks like a 14-year-old boy. We're going to need more than the dude with no legs. Like, we just going to have to bring a little bit more to the table, man.
Wait, Marco Stunt isn't 14?
Maybe he's 15 and a half. I don't know. But I mean,
he's a kid, though, right? He's not a grown man, is he?
Honestly, I don't know, man. I'm just talking shit. I honestly don't know how old that dude is.
He was a child. I didn't know he might be really grown.
You're just proving my point, Ray. Yeah. Wow. I really don't know, man. I just said 14 talking shit. I really don't know how old he is. He just looks like a 14-year-old. But
that's
you know,
a shoot, though. I thought he was grown. My God. I'm sorry. Please continue. Forgive me. Wow.
No, I really don't know. But the point I was trying to make was that if we're going to present this product to a mainstream audience, we've got to do a little better. And, you know, the funny thing is, man, I feel like the WWE, they won this war a long time ago when they started signing everybody, because there's clearly, you know, a talent or a lack of talent out there in the independents. You know what I mean? So, yeah, if you're going to make this a mainstream thing and you're trying to appeal to a mainstream audience, those guys are going to do it. But, I thought it was an entertaining show. There were some great highlights about it. I didn't really like the whole playing off the Firefest thing. That was kind of lame. And it's funny because I make a lot of criticisms of WWE because they have a lot of old white men in charge that are making decisions. And here, with the exception of Brandi Rhodes, which I don't think that's got enough credit or credence, and people aren't really talking about it that much, which why would they? Because it's a bunch of white dudes talking about wrestling anyway. But the fact that there's a black female executive in a major wrestling company, I don't think I have to jump off any small porches to say that that's never happened before. So that's kind of a big deal. So we got to give them their props on that. And that needs to be talked about more. But I understand why it's not. But we go from a bunch of old white guys to a bunch of young white guys that clearly don't have their finger on the pulse. Like they and I don't want to bury them because I know you're smiling and you're going to bury them. But I'm just saying, man, they appeal to somewhat. I'm just saying, man, it appeals to somewhat of a niche audience. And that niche audience isn't going to be enough to get you over. You have to appeal to the mainstream. And it's like I said, it's a bunch of young white guys making decisions. But, I mean, their decision to make the Fyter Fest, like, I can't be mad at them for trying to play off of that. It was a creative decision. It bombed horribly. But I would feel better, especially as this country continues to brown and brown and become browner and browner. It might behoove you to bring on some melon farmers that represent the changing demographics of this country. And, I mean, it's not – let's keep it a buck, man. Black people are the arbiters of culture in this country, which ultimately makes us the arbiters of culture in the world. So you might want to get a little pigment in there trying to make some decisions. And before you say, well, how many black guys are there out there to make decisions? Ernie Ladd was booking in the 70s. So miss me with that bullshit.
Yeah.
And I didn't even talk about the shot heard around the world. I'm sure we'll get into that.
Sure, but I kind of wanted to, like you did, and kind of speak on it from a macro standpoint. There's a lot to respond and unpack for what you said. 99% of it, I think I agree with. You mentioned the guys there and who they're booking for. They're booking for the people that they want to book for. See, and that was a conversation that a lot of us had at the very beginning when they announced AEW. Hell, when they announced All In, before AEW was even a thought process or actual fully functioned idea, because those guys so notoriously, and those guys, by those guys, I mean the Elite, Kenny, Cody, and the Bucks, are so notoriously something like that. Yeah, no, it's okay. That's about right. They're so notoriously in tune with what their fans want, but they don't cater to anybody else outside of their group. Because their fans, their group is so rabid and they always support financially. Like the Bucks were millionaires off of t-shirt sales because their group, their fans support them. And it's great. But now you're going to a major network with a major company with people outside of yourselves that you're on the hook for. You're EVPs. So ultimately the company rests with you guys. I'm gonna get deeper in that, but I want to talk about kind of the versus thing you meant. I think it is important to mention, no matter how much whatever you want to think about the guy, this, that, and the other, the guy who was bankrolling this process is a brown guy. Now I know that's not enough, but that is important to note. Your Brandi thing, facts are facts. A black woman in that level as an executive is unprecedented. But and this is you talk about me hating. This is what I'm gonna hate. Brandi wouldn't be there if she wasn't married to Cody. And that's the problem.
Don't do that.
I'm
not saying you're wrong, but let's not cheapen that.
I'm not cheapening
deal,
it.
Man. Let's not cheapen
No. You're looking at it from the wrong perspective. I'm not cheapening it. What I'm saying is that she should have got the job because she was talented enough to have it. She only got it because
she's married. Stephanie wouldn't be there if she wasn't Vince's father, Vince's daughter, though. So there's that.
She might not be in the position she is, but then again, I'm speaking facts. Stephanie worked in that company from 16 years old. Up. She built her way up in that company. So she might not have ended as chief branding officer and on the board of directors or whatever she is, but she would have gotten up in that company at some point. Brandi walked
in the door. You're telling me she would have got a job with that company at 16 years old if she wasn't the boss's daughter?
That's not what I said. No. And we're talking two different conversations, Chris. What I'm saying is the two situations are different. Now, had she had the resume, let's talk the conversation you want to have. If she would, let's say they hired her at 25, okay, to make it a
and
more
I'm not,
fair.
Oh, well, let me say this. I'm not shitting on Stephanie. Stephanie is a extremely intelligent woman, and you know she's done wonders with the WWE in terms of their PR. Like I'm not trying to downplay anything that Stephanie has done. Yes, she was born on third, but she also works hard. She's extremely intelligent, and she's an asset to that company. So I felt like I had to say that. I don't want the prevailing logic to be that I'm burying Stephanie because I'm not at all.
Sure, and the prevailing logic isn't me burying Brandi. I'm scared that you might be looking at it from the perspective that I'm not looking at it from. I'm not looking at it from an attack on Brandi. I'm looking at it as an attack on the company and on the business in general. Brandi is, from a resume perspective, is talented enough to be in a position or a similar position to what she is in. And I think it's a shame that the only reason she's there is because of her last name. That's the point I'm trying to make. Not that she can't do it without her last name. That's all I'm saying.
No, that's fair, but I that's just how the world works, man. The world is all about nepotism. So, I mean, whether good or bad, right or wrong, that's just what it is.
It is. Yeah, you're right. And I just wanted to point that out.
I'm not saying on her merits alone that she deserves to be there, and ultimately she'll prove herself one way or the other. You know what I mean? But
sure.
I just think that that's cool. And I know you don't disagree with that. We're on the same page on that, yeah. That's not even a question, yeah.
I think it's awesome. And this is a conversation maybe we can have another day, but I have a whole bunch of feelings on Brandi in general. That is a conversation we probably should have another day.
I can't say them because my lady's in the next room.
different feeling. Different feelings. Concerning the company, the problem is I feel like the talent is miscast. And to be fair, they haven't even been cast yet because we have no storylines yet. The only storylines are the ones that have been built online or on the two shows they've had. So we'll have a better assessment after September, October comes. But what I mean by that is, you mentioned Jimmy Havoc in general. Jimmy Havoc's entire gimmick is he can't beat you in a wrestling match because he can wrestle, but he's not the greatest wrestler. But you give him weapons and he'll literally murder you. And he's been put in situations where he can't do that. That's all he's good for. And that's not a diss to him because he's a talent in his own right. But every talent has their positives and negatives. So that's his positive. Put him in situations where, much like Joey Janela, you're not going to expect Joey Janela to wrestle a catch-as-catch-can match for 30 minutes and kill it. That's not his positives. Accentuate the positives and hide the negatives. That's what they're not doing. They keep putting MJF and Hangman Page against each other, but not against each other. But what are you building for? Like, you're not going to play it off at the big show because he's already going to face Jericho for the title. That could have been a match right there that people cared about. You didn't do it. The women's division is a problem. It is, because you got talented women. Britt Baker is amazing. Kylie Rae is amazing. Awesome Kong is a legend. And Nyla, and I appreciate them trying to build Nyla up, but you can't Braun Strowman her by letting her destroy everybody and then get beat up by a roll up.
Yeah, I love Nyla, but I feel like they're doing her a disservice because she keeps losing, and she should be the standard bearer in this division. And then when somebody actually overcomes her, that's going to put somebody else over. I don't know if Austin Kong is going to be there all the time, though. I don't know if that was a one-off or if she's actually on the roster. Like, she could be, and I'm just ignorant to the fact. She did sign.
Yeah, she's actually there.
Well, then that's the woman you need to build your division around, because she's the one that has the most name recognition, although she didn't look that great at Double or Nothing. Like, she just looked like she was a little beat down and haggard, you know what I mean?
Sure, and I think she's doing press now because I think Glow comes out. I think
Glow.
If not this week, next week. The season 3 comes out. So she's probably busy with that, with press and things of that nature. But she'll be back. And again, we're all building to when they have episodic television. But the main thing I want to say more than anything was, and this was the reason the Tony Khan had, I liked it to do the press conference after the show. They interviewed Tony Khan, and this was concerning the Moxley Janela match and the Cody chair shot. But he was really quick to let people know, and I mean, like, if you watch the interview, you can see how physically quick and concerned he was, and letting people know that when it comes to TV and TNT and the regular product, and not a pay-per-view one-off show like this was, this isn't going to be what it is. It's not going to be this level of cursing. It's not going to be this level of violence with tacks and barbed wire and chair shots to the head. This was just a special thing. And I find that interesting because very clearly he knows what makes money. And that's not going to do it. Not when you have a major level company that's going to be everywhere. So at least somebody there is aware of that.
My bad. Now, the Dean Ambrose-Joey Janela match, I didn't mind that as much. I mean, it was a little bit of brutality, but I thought it was tastefully done. The blood wasn't all over the places, which is what I assumed was going to happen when you got those two together. But, yeah, I thought it was cool for what it was. And Moxley is clearly, you know, next to Jericho, who wasn't on the show, is the biggest star that they have. And, you know, he's fresh off a WWE stint, so he's got name recognition. But that was cool. The chair shot.
Hold on. Before we get there, before we get there.
Okay.
We can put a bow on Mox and Janela real quick. I enjoyed that match because I like the odd hardcore match every now and then. I don't need to see it every week. Every now and then it's cool, but there's a reason for it. And the reason for it, and are both of these guys made their name on that. Janela didn't think that he could still do it, so he called him out. That's something I can get involved. That's a story there, right? But I was shocked that they didn't go harder. Pleasantly shocked. Because I thought he was going to show, like they were going to show the world. Like I just thought that there was going to be some glass and some light tubes and everything involved. And they just had some tacks and barbed wire. I was pleasantly surprised by that. And shout out to the old school turning the lights off for an unsanctioned match. I popped hard for that.
Yeah, and everything you said, I totally agree with. I thought they were going to really go balls to the wall, and they didn't, and I was pleasantly surprised. It was still a high level of brutality, but it wasn't gory. And, you know, it's weird, man, Ray, because, you know, I've been watching wrestling for 30 years now, man, and, you know, when I was younger, I popped for all that shit. I popped for the blood and the chair shots and all this and that, but the older I get – and maybe it's just because I'm, you know, less ignorant now and I understand about CTE and I see the after effect that, you know, these athletes are going through. Like, you know, I've been to a few manias and I see all these old guys limping around and, you know, they didn't work near the style that these guys and women are working nowadays. So I, you know, it's a little realer to me right now, but it's too much. So yeah, that's why I was pleasantly surprised with the Moxley Janela match. It was highly entertaining. It had brutality, but it didn't go too far.
If you know better, you do better.
Yeah. So, should we get to the chair shot heard around the world now?
Well, no, absolutely. I wanted to say something about that match, too, so we're done with that. Moxley and Janela can go home and have a beer. Let's talk about the thing that everybody talked about from that night.
Okay, so... you know, when I watched it initially, obviously I literally cringed, and you know, it was, even Amber noticed it. Like, I literally cringed, and I said, okay, it's 2019, man. We don't need to be doing chair shots to the head, unprotected chair shots to the head at that. That's a bit much. I like the way that they debuted. What's his name now? The formerly known as Ty Dillinger. What's his name?
Sean Spears. His re-debut, because he was in the Battle Royal. But yeah, Sean Spears.
Okay, yeah, I forgot. He was in the Battle Royal. I didn't watch the pre-show for Double or Nothing. But yeah, he was in the Battle Royal. So yeah, his re-debut and going at Cody. It was tough to watch, man. It really was. And then I saw clips of the Young Bucks press conference, you know, after the show. And didn't they say something along the lines that the chair was gimmicked?
Well, okay. So you want to go there first? You want to talk about the match first? We can go there.
Either or.
I got some heat to put on that. Okay.
Okay.
First and foremost, let's say this. Let me be positive, because you always talk about how I'm a hater of AEW. So let me be positive.
You got a lot of hate coming out this show. That's fair.
Well, thank you. I'm a truth teller, but thank you. There is a story being built between Cody and Sean Spears. And I can appreciate the story they want to tell that will be probably going into Double or Nothing. What that is on one of these Road to Double or Nothing shows, or one of these Road to shows that are on YouTube or whatnot, Cody talked about signing Sean Spears and said he was happy to sign him and hoped he'd be a bit of a player coach because he was a good hand. Essentially downplaying that he could be anybody. He was just going to be like a guy backstage and maybe help out the talent, but he was never going to be a star. So
that's the storyline. He's going out trying to make a name for himself.
Absolutely. So I can appreciate that. Now, with that being said, the chair shot to the head was stupid. Before we even get to anything else, just the idea of doing that, especially unprotected, was dumb. Now, you trying to gimmick the chair, if they did, is even stupider, because you can't gimmick something that real. Go ask Sammy Callahan about that when he bashed a bat into Eddie Edwards' face. Like, you just don't do those things like that to protect the other talent. Even going further, the Young Bucks giving away the game, and look and talking to people like, oh, well, y'all are stupid. We know better than y'all. We gimmicked the chair. It just didn't work. It was a mistake. No, the only mistake was the idea. So, you know, and it's like everybody in the company is blaming the chair for not doing his job. Can you blame Cody for coming with the idea and blame Sean Spears for messing up the chair shot? Both people failed. The chair did his job. So yeah, like it's like people getting mad that, like, with these fools going around playing around lions. Well, the lion shouldn't eat them. The lion did his job. The lion's job is to eat people. Like, don't be mad at the lion. Don't be mad at the chair. The chair's supposed to hurt. So that, yeah, man, that whole situation just, and I'm so glad that I fell asleep right before that happened, because I missed it. I didn't see it
until I woke up next month. I don't know what's worse, brother. I don't know if it's worse that they did the unprotected chair shot to the head, or that the Young Bucks tried to explain it away and say that the chair was supposed to be gimmicked and, you know, things went wrong, because now you're exposing the business. And I mean, we all know that it's a work, but the thing is, and it's the reason why Brock Lesnar is one of the biggest draws in the world right now, because there's an air of realism to what he does. Like, we're willing to go along for the ride, but when you just openly expose the business like that, it's a bad look. And I don't know if I don't know what they were thinking. I don't know if that was them just playing damage control because it got such a negative backlash after the fact, or what
that's
it,
what
was, but clearly
that's what it was.
It clearly shouldn't have happened. It clearly didn't work out the way they thought it was going to work out. And frankly, it shouldn't happen. Like I said earlier, man, it's 2019. We know too much about CTE and whatnot, and we just don't need unprotected chair shots to the head at this point. Like, that's just, yeah, that's not a good look.
It's so, again, that's why Tony Khan was so adamant when they asked him about it to like say this ain't, this isn't what's gonna happen. And Kenny Omega's used to getting flamed. We talked about it Thursday. Like he's put himself up. In fact, this exact show that this was built off of last year had Chaz and Rance, the guy who's a sex offender, who built the ring and wrestled before the match, and Cody stuck up for him. So like Kenny. So Kenny's used to taking some backlash. Cody's used to taking backlash because he's a Rhodes and he grew up in the WWE. He's used to it. The Young Bucks aren't used to backlash because they've stayed in their bubble since they left TNA. So they get some backlash off of a show that they built. They didn't know how to handle it. So their first thought was, well, give away the game. That was a terrible idea.
Yeah. And now, I mean, it was a terrible idea. Go ahead.
No, I'm saying real quick, you taking the sales out of Sean Spears now. Because if you're going to, yes. the one thing I appreciate, and I hate saying this, I feel disgusting, but the one thing I appreciate about the TNA Impact Owl Wrestling in Canada, or whatever they're called, is that when the Sami Callihan situation happened, they doubled down. And I hated the fact that they did that, but it made compelling television and a story that was interesting, and Eddie eventually got his comeuppance when he came back. So if you played this as if this was a shoot, the least you can do is get some compelling television.
And frankly, that's the only way they could have did it, because they look even worse now exposing the business. Like, that's how they should have played it. They should have doubled down, as you said.
Oh,
take the initial backlash, which next week we'll have something else to bitch about and everybody will forget about it. You know what I mean? But they're playing in this everybody gets a participation trophy world, and they're trying to be all inclusive and this and that. And there's nothing wrong with that per se, but it's still professional wrestling. And, you know, the realer that people think it is, the more money that you have the potential to draw. And, yeah, you just totally exposed the business. That's just a bad look. Obviously, this is something that shouldn't have never happened. It shouldn't have been sanctioned. They shouldn't have did it, but it looks even worse that they exposed the business by, you know, trying to explain. That's just not a bad look. They could have doubled down and maybe got some actual heat on Sean Spears. Let him come out and cut a promo, and, you know, you could even play with the lines. You can even blur the lines, rather, and play with that fourth wall and say, you know, it wasn't how it was supposed to go, but I'm sick of being underutilized and underappreciated, so I went for mine. You know what I mean? And try to get some heat off
the guy. Yeah. They told me to protect him, but I said, fuck that. I'm going to make my mark or something. Anyway, real quick. Al Horford signs a four-year deal for $109 million with the Philadelphia 76ers.
Wow.
Oh, we may.
Wow.
Bye, Jimmy Butler.
Wow. So one of them leaving, either Tobias or Jimmy. And maybe they knew Jimmy was leaving.
Tobias re-upped this morning, or this afternoon. He got $180 million. Yeah.
Oh, so by Jimmy Butler, yes. By Jimmy Butler, which I don't know how that's going to go in the locker room, because, you know, him and Embiid have gotten hella cool.
They know his business. They know what it is. They traded every pick in the world for 5 years. They know what it is. Going back to the Cody conversation, I want to say that the one thing that bothers me the most about the whole thing is that it destroys the performance Darby Allin put in. I really like that kid when he's not being the disgusting throw-up guy with his wife, Priscilla Kelly. But I've seen him live, and he is a mix of Raven, Jeff Hardy, and Mikey Whipwreck in ECW. Essentially, his gimmick is essentially that he's impervious to pain and doesn't care about his body or his life, so he does whatever he can to hurt you, which often involves hurting himself. And he did that. And, like, the fact that they booked him to go to a 30-minute draw with Cody is indicative of how they feel about that guy. So, but we forgot about that. I don't care about that now because Cody took a fucking chair shot to the head.
Yeah, in a good way, by the way, yeah. The fact that they didn't let Cody, you know, go over clean. So, that means they feel a certain way about him, and that's a good thing.
You're right. But so here's where I sit on my high horse. So you can let Cody go to a draw with Darby Allin, the kid from Evolve. But Pac can't go to a draw with Hangman? Like, bruh. And so now you've lost out on Pac in general because you wouldn't book a draw with him at Double or Nothing.
I'm not going to get into that, but in Darby Allin and the Cody match, it wasn't a bad match, but I kind of put him in my Jimmy Havoc box where it's just a pasty, small, white dude that it's hard to believe that he can beat anybody's ass. And I don't know how that's going to play to a mainstream audience.
But they, well, especially considering how Darby is going to get sympathy, and he always got sympathy. When I saw him in Evolve, that was before, like, live. That was before he did the face paint thing. And he was just the emo kid who, like, everybody loved. Now he's got this dark gimmick that actually works for him that almost breeds for you to dislike the kid instead of have sympathy for him. So, but I know they're supposed to be a sporting company and not an entertainment company, even though they do Hadoukens to people in the ring. So, you know, forgive me and have a hardcore match with a Japanese comedy wrestler and a CEO who's not a wrestler, and they hit each other with pool noodles and stuff. But because it's supposed to be serious, though. Just saying.
Yeah, I feel like they're trying to get every fringe wrestling audience and have something for everybody. And that's admirable, but ultimately, I don't know if that's going to draw ratings with a mainstream audience. I hate bringing it back to that, but it is. And, you know, I don't want to make it sound like I hated the show, because I didn't hate the show. There was a lot of things that made me cringe, but overall, I was entertained. Even if it was in a bad way, but I was still entertained. So I don't want to say that. But I don't know what they're going to do. I really don't. And I don't know where they're going to get talent to fill out their mid-card, which that's what I see as their ultimate weakness, the lack of a competent mid-card, and that the women's division is trash. And I don't really know how you fix that, because who's out there? I mean, maybe you double down and go try to get some more veterans, like a MVP, somebody that has some name recognition and value. But other than that, I don't really know what you do, because, I mean, who's the next big kid on the stage? And a lot of these guys and women that they're promoting, I don't know how many of them actually have actual, like, TV experience, because it's a lot different playing to an indie show of 200 people as opposed to playing to a nationwide television audience. Like, there's differences.
Absolutely.
In that. And, you know, and a lot of guys and women that go to WWE that have been in the business for a while, when they go to NXT and, you know, they learn about playing to the camera and stuff like that, they'll say that much. Like, there's a difference in that.
So I disagree with you slightly. They have the talent in the mid-card and in the women's division. The booking isn't there yet. And that's because, let's talk about the women real quick.
Okay.
I love the Joshis are amazing wrestlers. The problem is they just threw the Joshis out there and said, get over. And it's not working because nobody knows who they are and nobody knows what they do. So they got the respectful claps at Double or Nothing. But like last night, you know, it was Nyla against two Japanese chicks instead of it being Nyla against the scrappy face and the cis face, or the, like, there was no character development other than Nyla, because we know who she is. So that's going to hurt them, because they need to build these people up and let us know who they are. So when they start using their regular people, like Kylie and like Britt and like Kong, and even though they had, from what I heard, a terrible match, but Leva Bates, the librarian chick, who's a terrible wrestler but a great character actor, and Allie, like, they're known commodities that know what they're doing. Once you build them in more, and even Brandy, who's a decent wrestler and has worked hard on her craft, like, it'll be better when you stop trying to just throw people out there and see whatever sticks. That's the issue. Kenny's booking the women's division, and Kenny's a notorious Japanese mark. Once they start building the division and having the wrestlers actually show the crowd who they are, and you invest it, it'll be better. The issue with the mid-card is there's no hierarchy yet. There's no structure yet. they're just doing matches. They're doing matches just for the sake of matches. There's a word, you know the word I'm looking for, but
yeah,
there's no structure. So there's no the mid card is wrestling the mid card match and the main event is wrestling the main event match. Because if that was the case, then why is Hangman Page in a fatal four way with three other guys who are essentially in the mid card? Like, and they're in the second or third match of the night. You know what I mean? SCU is supposed to be one of your top acts, and the first act that signs for you guys is on the pre-show. Like, there's no structure yet. They're just doing matches for the fact of matter of doing matches. Once they start building weekly, episodically, and remember, they're doing a two-hour show, one show a week, so you can't put more than 20 people on that show. It'll make more sense, and the mid-card will kind of even itself out when you see Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus regularly in their spot, when you see Jimmy Havoc and Joey Janela regularly in their spot, when you see Dreamer, if he's going to be there regularly, or Sonny Kiss, or Orange Cassidy, whoever they're going to do, regularly in their spots, it'll make more sense then. And when the Elite stop winning every damn match, which hopefully will be very soon, it'll make more sense.
Well, you got to double down on the Elite because they're the biggest stars you have. And number two, frankly, I don't know if they have 20 compelling men and women that are going to resonate with a mainstream audience as of yet. Now, maybe, you know, they've got some creative shit up their sleeves that can make them feel relevant, but it's going to be interesting to see. Ooh, pardon me. It's going to be interesting to see.
Well, let's play that game. If you don't mind, can we play that game?
Sure, we got about 10 minutes left. Let's play.
I'm looking at their roster, and I'm gonna name all these guys that are on their roster, and you tell me if you know them and you are even the slightest bit invested in them. Is that fair? Is that cool?
Okay. Cool.
All right. Hangman Page.
Yes and yes.
Chris Jericho.
Yes and yes.
Chris Daniels.
Yes and no.
Well, I mean, I know, so you don't have to say if you're invested in them, but you know of them. Like, you,
yes,
if
okay,
you saw them on TV,
fair.
It's
yeah,
going to be
I,
a shot. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know of them. And, yeah, and he can put on great matches. I don't want to shit on him.
No, absolutely. He's a legend. He call it what it is.
Yeah.
I'm going to put them together because I know you don't know them individually, but best friends.
Yes.
4 and 5. Cody,
yes.
6, Dustin Rhodes.
Yes.
Well, then, since I did Best Friends of the tag team, I'll do Kazarian and Scorpio Sky, the rest of SCU.
Yes, I know them. I don't know how well they'll resonate with the mainstream audience, but yes, I know them. So I'll just say yes. Yes.
Okay. So we're at 8 right now.
Okay.
Joey Janela.
Yes. But he's not going to resonate with a regular mainstream audience, though.
Not eventually, but,
yes, but
he does have an interesting gimmick that I think will get over with time. But, yeah, Kenny Omega, of course, so that's 10.
Yes.
The Young Bucks, that's 11 and 12. MJF,
yes.
MJF, that's 13, okay?
MJF's not the biggest star they have, but the dude with the most upside just because he's so young and he's so good already.
That's it was a promo that Triple H cut on Evolution, some Randy Orton. That's the coal that he's gonna make it to a diamond. That's MJF.
Yeah, he's gonna make somebody a lot of money one day in this industry.
Yes, sir. The Lucha Brothers, Phoenix and Pentagon.
Yes.
That's 15, and then Sean Spears, Ty Dillinger.
Yes.
That's 16 men that I mentioned that you know, and I even give you 15 because, yes, Janela isn't known worldwide, but all 15 of those guys, if your random wrestling fan would see on TV, they would know who they are. Is that fair?
But how many of those guys that you've mentioned have actually drawn money?
The only person that's ever drawn money, there's probably 4 people that's drawn any kind of money. 5, 6. 6 people. It's the top of the card. It's of course, the WWE guys with Cody,
yeah,
with Moxley and with Jericho. And then
see, I wouldn't even include Cody that drew money. I guess you can credit him with All In. Is that where you
go?
No,
I'm going All In and Ring of Honor that year. That entire year when he carried the belt.
Okay.
They did money.
Okay.
In fact, if you want to think of it this way, the super card they had when it was Cody versus Kenny, and then they put Marty versus whoever it was that's irrelevant. Dalton Castle afterwards, and nobody cared about it. That sold that house, and that was the biggest house Ring of Honor ever did before the Garden.
Okay, cool. All right, that's fair. That's fair. Fair enough.
So Cody, Moxley, and Jericho, and then I think Kenny drew money for New Japan, and the Bucks drew money for the Indies.
Yes.
So that's it. Six people.
Yeah. That's it.
And you know,
we could probably put the Lucha Brothers in there because they drew money for AAA. Yeah.
And if you want to think outside the box, when Kong was in TNA, that was the main thing that TNA had to offer. So Kong might have drew a little money in TNA.
She might have. No, that's fair. She did. I mean, Kong, her matches with Gail King, goddamn. But I just don't know how relevant she's going to be or how much around she's going to be because, like, at Double or Nothing, man, she just wasn't moving that well. She just wasn't, man. She's seen better days, yes.
She didn't look good at all. You're absolutely right. It's not perfect. It's not perfect at all. But they have potential. And this is weird that I'm sticking up for them. But they have potential. It's just they're not. Nobody in this company has ever booked. So hopefully they get better. But it's got to get better once you have weekly episodic television and you can actually look at the quarter ratings or look at the YouTube numbers or look at the social counts and see what's getting over. But just know
that's true.
Fans, and just know fans that's listening, when they become a lot more structured like WWE is, you wonder why. This is why. Because they'll know what makes money when it makes money.
And my issue isn't the fact that they have bookers that have never booked, because you've got guys. You've got Jericho. You've got Dustin Rhodes. You've got Dean Malenko. You've got Billy Gunn. Like, you have enough guys there that have experience, that know what they're doing, that can help them through that process. So I'm not worried about that. My issue coming out of Fyter Fest is the lack of depth in the roster. And, you know, they've got a lot of guys and women on that roster right now that I don't know how well they're going to resonate with a mainstream crowd. That's my big takeaway coming out of this. Like, I didn't think it was a bad show. I was entertained. I'm still hopeful for them. And I still think, like, this is some cool ass shit that they're doing, but they got a lot of work to do.
One more big announcement from the NBA. Jimmy Butler has been signed and traded to the Miami Heat for Josh Richardson and a package, I guess, of picks, maybe like people to make the money work. And Jimmy Butler would get the full max. So Jimmy Butler is officially a Miami Heatian, word to Shaq.
All right. Well, yeah, the NBA, just when we thought wrestling was heated up, the NBA said, hey, don't forget about us, Melon Farmer.
I'm telling you, and I like the Richardson for Philly because he's the guy to play hard on defense. He's a good shooter, and he doesn't need the ball. He's not going to demand the ball like Jimmy Butler did. That just means that Ben Simmons got to get on his steal-o this offseason. Like, hand your
business. Ben, I'm going to need you to shoot, like, 2,000 jump shots every day, but we'll see if he does that. Ray, why don't you let the good folks know where they can find you, brother?
I am at The Real C Platt on Twitter, and I'm at It's Ray Cash, R-E-Y as in Mysterio, C-A-S-H as in dollars. That's my new gimmick. I just put over the other guy's Twitter handle now.
And
don't forget to follow the show at Chair Shot Radio. And, of course, the company, the crew, the website at thechairshot.com.
You heard the man. You guys can find me at The Real C Platt on Twitter. More importantly, if you enjoy what we do, make sure you take your stinking asses to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. Pick up your official Chair Shot t-shirts. Please and thank you. Thank you and please. for Mr. Cash. I'm Mr. Platt. Thanks for tuning in this week. We'll see you back here next week. Until then, shalom.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.